Y vậy nhá. Well, compassion is sort of the central, you know, ground of Buddhist practice, and that you have to be willing, you know, they often say Buddhism begins with compassion for yourself, you know, just to be willing to embrace yourself. Because in the end, it's kind of like, you can't really say, I'm going to take everyone else's suffering, but I want to put up with my own. Or I can love everyone else, but I can't really love myself. Like somehow there's all these good people out there, and I'm the exception. And actually, and that's the normal fact, that what you can't stand in yourself, you find very hard to put up with in everyone else. And compassion is just the willingness in a way to be with suffering. And Buddhist training is really opening your heart to whatever's there by not putting any barrier by being just caught up in yourself. It's like there, one of the lines, a famous Buddhist line I always like is, to study Buddhism is to study the self, which in a way is what you're doing by practicing. You're trying to be more aware of what you're thinking, feeling, what you're doing, what you're generating. To study the self is to forget the self. What does that mean, to forget? Well, once you stop getting so self-absorbed and you're really paying attention to what you're doing, you also can paying attention to what everyone else is. Once you're not just talking to yourself all the time, when you're with somebody, you can be with them by kind of letting go of all that stuff. And then you'll feel much more what they're feeling. And that's compassion, the willingness just to be with it. And helping others is, you know, central in Buddhist practice, in the sense that we're trying to do, like the Buddha said, what is the teaching of all the Buddhas? And he was describing the fact that he had visions of Buddhas before him. You know, it's like on our line of teachers, masters. The historical Buddha is actually the seventh Buddha, because he said there were Buddhas before him, and there'll be Buddhas. A lot of you have probably heard of Maitreya. Maitreya is the next Buddha. After the Buddha Shakyamuni disappears, teaching vanishes, another Buddha will come. And he said, what is the teaching of all the Buddhas? And he said, the teaching of all the Buddhas is to cease from evil, to do good, and to do good for others. And doing good means, from Buddhist point of view, evil isn't evil. It's just doing something that's going to cause suffering. Simple as that. If you're going to make the world a better place, it's not evil. If it's better for yourself and others, then doing good is a very important part of training. You're not just trying to do evil. Whatever you're doing, hopefully, is going to make it better. Just like in our lives, we don't want to just get by. We want to make our lives better. We want to actually be happier. And actually, being happy is an important part of Buddhism. You know, you're trying to be joy and happiness are a fruit of training. We're trying to actually realize we have a ground for joy, no matter how we feel, no matter what's going on. And then helping others is that, which also is purifying your heart, which in a way is getting rid of your own selfishness, so you can actually freely do what will help other people to not suffer. And that means at times social action, and at times, like, what good is different for each of us. You know, how we can help others. It's just like when somebody says, well, how can you just not do something about this one, about, let's say, homeless, or the Arab-Israeli situation, or ecology. Truthfully, no matter what you do, there's 100 equally other good causes you could be working on. You know, it's like, you know, if you think about it, whatever you're socially active for, it's not like you're not ignoring 9 other good socially active causes. So you're still always making a choice to do one thing. And all you can do is ask yourself, and this is very central to Buddhist practice, is whatever you're doing, to be still, quiet down, let go of all, as much of the stuff as you can, and just ask yourself, what is good to do in this situation? What is needed here? What's going to cause the least harm, the most good, and will really benefit others and myself? At times that's social action. At times that's cleaning your house. At times that's going to school. At times that's helping raise your children. At times, and there's no formula. It's not like one stands against the other. We're always doing a multiple of things, and we are always making endless choices that I have to put my attention in. Like sometimes it's what's really good to do is to take a walk, to watch a movie, to read a book, to talk to a friend, because naturally, you know, you're not saying, wow, it's bad to relax. No, you're not. You know, sometimes I realize, God, I just need more sleep. You know, that what's good to do is me find a way to get more sleep, or sometimes I need to help somebody else, and sometimes I need to help myself, and what I have to do is ask who needs the help more, and accept that it's limited. You know, we can't fix the whole world. Just like I can't stop other people from suffering, so the question is, what can I do to help them? And see, actually, this will really help them a lot, then I should do it. You know, this, they really need help in this situation. Let me give the help. God, I'm really tired now. You know, I just can't make this a priority. I have to tell them no. Just like somebody called up to come to this retreat. And with new people, I had a tendency to say, oh, God, I hate to turn people down. But it was somebody who had been here before. I thought, God, he's done this already before. He can come another time. Because I thought I didn't want to pack too many people into this retreat. So I just had to think, what's really good to do here? You know, and he signed up for the next retreat 2 weeks from now. So he's been here before. He actually did a retreat before. He doesn't need the beginner's retreat. So he can come another time. Just what is good to do? And the world is part of ourselves, you know, and it's just what is needed here. Just like when we come home, what is needed in our home? What is needed in our family? And it's hard to know. And to kind of open our hearts to whatever's there. It all matters. You know, it's like the suffering of everyone matters. You know, that's, you know, a famous vow in Buddhism is, however innumerable beings are, I vow to save them all. You know, the Bodhisattva vow. And that's not saying, I, Kinrei, I'm going to save the world. I'm willing to do whatever's good to do. In the end, what's real saves them. I just get out of the way. The less self there is, the more I can freely do what's good. The more I'm in my head on what is needed, what is good, and judging, like, God, I'm not accomplishing anything. Well, that's not up to me. It's just like this retreat. Who knows? This may help some of you, none of you, all of you. I have no, you know, that's out of my hands. I can only offer this the best of my ability and then let go of it. And whatever people get out of it is what they get out of it. I can't. You know, the only thing that's going to help you is awakening in yourself the desire to practice. And that's out of my control. You know, people often will leave a retreat like this saying, this is all great stuff, but it's not really what I want to do now. And that's normal. I mean, because really the thing that will make you train isn't what I say. It's what in your heart is telling you what you think you need to do and what your priority is. And that's, and this desire will come when all when the conditions ripen, because this is actually what's real. In the end, when you let go of things, the longing to practice and to be at peace and to find what's real is there. It's like none of us have to generate the desire. Fundamentally, we don't have to generate the desire to train, to find what's real. If we're willing to let go of everything else, it's already there. You know, it's like if you don't hold on to, I want to be on the top of Mount Everest, or I want to be, you know, just like I remember meeting a movie star, kind of came to a retreat, and it was kind of cute, because it was one of those classic things, there she is, gorgeous woman, retreat, and she said, you know, she spent her whole life trying to be a movie star. Her parents even kind of, almost it's like, out of the womb, I want to be somebody. You know, her family wanted her to be somebody. She had the good karma to be, have the looks, you know, to be a movie star. And she says, you know, and she said she remembered she was making a presentation on the Academy Awards when she first made her first hit movie. So there she is, you know, you're on the Academy Awards presenting something. Her mother was dying, and she thought to herself, what is the point of all of this? What difference does it make the fact that here I am in this gorgeous gown in front of, you know, 300 million people saying this, and my mother's dying? You know, what is the point of it? You know, and what does it really matter? Because really, what does it really matter? You know, she just wholeheartedly pursued that, as we all pursue things. And that's the normal, it's normal life. But in the end, we realize none of them, even if they're good to do, because a lot of it is good to do, A lot of us are living lives that we're doing a lot of things that are needed, good to do. It's not that they're not needed or good. It's that what is the real purpose of our lives? And it doesn't mean like, you know, you leave this retreat and you're still not going to be doing 98% of the same things you were doing before. Even if you're a Buddhist trainee deeply, you still have to work. You know, you have to do all those things. You still have family, jobs, careers, friends. It doesn't stand against that, but what is your real purpose in what you're doing? That can change and can free you from not being bound by the fact that, God, I have to get this, you know, my job has to take me here. This relationship has to take me here. Anyway, I think I'm going to stop talking because it's nice for people to meditate on these retreats. Anyway, what we'll do is we'll have a period of meditation now, another half hour period. Then there'll be a, then we'll have lunch, probably about 1:15. We're probably going to do it. I'm probably going to set up the food with this many people. We often eat kind of formal meals in here, but I don't want to cram everyone in this room for the meals. We're going to say a blessing before taking the food, then take food on trays from tables outside. People can either eat outside or up here. Just eat quietly, put the food, you know, away. And then we'll have a service after lunch. It'll begin with a service called midday service that we do kind of about an hour after we eat lunch. Hopefully give people time to digest the food and eat it, I think. And our lunch is going to just be salad, some mild chili, not a lot of spice, but mild chili and salad and bread, kind of a simple lunch. And you can take, you know, take food. We'll have sheets with a blessing. We'll all get together, say what are called the five thoughts, say it, then just take our food and just eat quietly. And then do that. Then have a break for about half an hour. Then we'll do midday service. The midday service, get it with three bows like this. You'll be sitting facing out. There'll be three bows like this. The seated version of full bows, and this is where you raise your hands in kind of an offering where you're doing it. We do three bows seated. Then there'll be incense offered. And then we'll chant, we'll recite a scripture called Rules for Meditation, which is Dogen, who's the main teacher in Soto Zen. He brought the teaching from China to Japan. And his first thing he wrote were these ways to meditate and practice. And Dogen always had a nice thing. He said, you know, really, the only teaching you need is rules for meditation. So since it's the only teaching we need, we traditionally say it every day. So even though we don't, in this temple, actually don't say it every day, but if we had more of a schedule here, we would. I only have morning and evening meditation on our daily schedule here, so we don't actually do this every day. But it's nice on retreats to do. You say it. Then we'll turn around and have a half-hour meditation period, facing the wall at the end of it. And we'll do those same bows again at the end of the scripture. You know, there'll be the bows. And then you'll do three bows, just the first one like this in Gassho. The second two with your hands clasped like this, where you just bow from the waist. Then you'll turn around and face the wall, the screens. And don't worry, you just follow everyone else. You know, don't worry about doing things here. It's not a test. You know, just if you notice you're not doing what everyone else is doing, just try to put yourself in a line. You know, it's kind of, it's not like important if you don't do something right. You know, if you keep practicing, you'll get it. If you don't keep practicing, it doesn't matter. You know, if you don't come back here again, who cares if you don't do it the same way? And then we'll have a meditation period. Then there'll be another class like that. And then there'll be another period of meditation, and that'll be the retreat. So anyway, I'll probably start sitting. A couple basics that it's nice to mention. You know, one is just kind of on a retreat like this is just to cover some of the Buddhist basics since it's central in the practice. One is karma, which kind of knew karma was sort of permeating our culture when I heard a country western song about 10 years ago saying, there's just some bad old karma coming down the road. And I just thought, this is sort of getting in our culture, karma. But karma from a Buddhist point of view is just cause and effect. And it's very important to realize that when you look at it through meditation and through Buddhist eyes, what's happening to you isn't either rewards or punishment, but just karma, in the sense that nobody's judging you. You know, karma from a Buddhist point of view is impersonal. It's like It's like saying if you fall out a window, God, gravity's out to get me. You know, gravity doesn't have anything to do with it. It's just, this is the way the world is. From a Buddhist point of view, when you do wrong, it has a consequence. When you try to blindly, often you know you're doing, and that's what the Buddhist precepts are, saying that when you do wrong, there's a consequence. Because when you do wrong from a Buddhist point of view, you're purposely saying, in some level or other, I'm doing something that I know is going to cause suffering. And it has a consequence on you, on many different levels. So there's that sort of deep mystical level, like, God, is this from a past life or other things? But as a consequence on you on the very present is that you don't want to be that type of person. And when you ask most people, do they really like themselves? Do they feel really fully accept who they are? Are they not ashamed of anything about themselves? Very few people say yes. Most people actually don't like aspects of themselves. That's karma. That meant they chose to do something and be somebody they didn't wish to be. And you really don't like to look at that. And that's one level of karma. Also, karma is telling you, from a Buddhist point of view, however you feel, is a consequence of karma. And if you ever want to feel bad, if you ever do feel bad, well, you're ex-Catholic. You wanted to feel bad. That's Catholic karma. Somehow, you know, it's like, you know, it's like without guilt, what is there? But, from a Buddhist point of view, when you feel bad, you have to look at what it is that you were doing, what it is that you were asking for. You know, it's like if I feel crummy, it's very important to see this is a consequence of what I was asking for and what I was doing. And often you can just look at it. I feel, you know, if you look carefully with meditative eyes, you can see that there's a consequence in how I've been living and how I am feeling. Just like from a Buddhist point of view, you're really supposed to treat things. You know, it's like there's a nice Buddhist principle I always like. They say, whatever you're given, treat it with gratitude. And you realize, I realize sometimes I'm suffering because I'm not doing that. I'm saying, I don't really want this in my life. I want a different life. I want different karma. And we don't really, you know, and it's funny. I remember telling this to somebody who was kind of saying, having some difficulty, and I was saying, try just to approach everything where you can just be grateful for what you're being given now. Not, oh, that you always have to like, God, my engine blew up. Thank you, Lord. But that it's still okay. You're still being given what you know, your life isn't horrible. It's just your engine blows up. You know, or somebody's angry with you, or you're on the Bay Bridge and you're not going to move anywhere for 3 hours. You know, this isn't anything horrible happening. But people describing stuck in traffic like it's horrible, and I think that they're getting upset because they're not here facing a wall. You know, they're not moving in a car, and they're upset because, wow, that keeps me from going to somewhere else where I'm not going to move. You know, I mean, it's looking at it, it's really that expectation of where nothing is. When you're stuck in traffic, there's no suffering. The suffering is just, you're not going to be where you want to be. I mean, is it painful really not to be moving in a car? No. You're just not going anywhere. What causes the suffering is the fact that you're saying, I have to be somewhere. And since you don't have a choice about it, usually, it's like it's completely out of your control, generally. You know, there usually isn't another route you can use. Changing lanes all the time is just driving everyone else crazy. It's just accepting what's there. And it's funny, I was telling this to somebody, she said, you know, I just heard Oprah say that at a conference. And I thought, that's great. And I always like this story, and she kind of tells me, yeah, and Oprah had this conference somewhere that she was doing, an address some conference or other, mm-hmm. No idea at what, and she says, Oprah's saying she was kind of falling to pieces at some event or something. And she kind of just felt like she couldn't handle it anymore. And she kind of goes into the bathroom and she's kind of crying on a toilet stall, hiding. And she says she calls up Maya Angelou to complain. And Maya Angelou just says, stop it, be grateful. And Oprah says, starts sputtering, but, and Maya Angelou just says, stop it, be grateful. And I thought, good Buddhist teaching. You know, just stop, you know, just, you know, you're still being given what you need. It's not like there's a problem that you're just not getting something that you want. And the karma is that what we're asking for, we can't control God, that I'm not going to have cancer tomorrow, or, you know, that, you know, the earthquake won't happen, or people will like me, or whatever it is that we're asking for. And how we feel is really a consequence of what we've been asking for. In Buddhism, there's a line the Buddha said, volition is the doer of karma. Our choices make our future. You know, we choose to do things. We choose how to approach things. We choose what we're asking for. Just like I notice sometimes I get caught up in work, you know, where I'm really completely absorbed and I really want to get this right. And I get it wrong. And I feel depressed as hell because I'm putting all this effort into getting it right and I get it wrong. You know, it's like I was trying to do something. It's just like cooking food where you put all this effort into making a good dish. And it comes out dreadful. And you want everyone to eat it and say, wow, this is great. And you did something wrong and it's lousy, you know, it's whatever it is. It didn't came out completely wrong. You know, and we've all been in that situation where somebody's sputtering, but it's supposed to be this way, that way. Everybody's eating and thinking, this is okay. What are they kind of going, but because it didn't come out the way that they wanted to. Now, what it is what are you trying, what are you kind of asking for? Volition is the doer of karma. If what you want is to make good food, you're going to be depressed. You're going to be feeling crummy some of the time because sometimes it just doesn't come out. Whatever you do is never going to always work. There's nothing you can always be successful with. You know, it's just like there's no situation where you can get everyone to like you or doing it. So from a Buddhist, and often people view meditation, and this is another common concept in the culture, that meditation is just concentrating on something. So people will come and say, God, I meditate so well when I play the guitar, or I run, or I do something. And what they're just describing is they can drop everything and do, you know, play the guitar, or run, or do something. That's nice, but spiritually it's not of much importance. Because, you know, because spiritually, it's really what we're trying to do that makes our spiritual life. So if you're trying to be a good guitarist, it may help you to be one single-minded when you play the guitar and not be distracted, not do anything else, just like if you want to run. And you may feel at peace with it. And that's nice. It's good karma, and it is good to not to be distracted and all those things. It is helpful in training to do one thing at a time, to be present with what you're doing. And I'm saying, you know, that is helpful. So you do want to be present like the guitarist when he's playing the guitar. You do want to be doing one thing and not somewhere else, thinking about where you will be going and where you aren't going. And that's an aspect of mindfulness. And it's a very important aspect. We're often in a fog. And we've all been with people who seem to be making a mess. We're with people because it's much easier to see it in other people, you know, than in ourselves. Where we look at other people and we can see, God, they keep doing this. Don't they notice? You know, why are they in such a fog not to notice that they keep going out with the same type of person and then wondering why they have the same problem or treating somebody the same way or even burning the food. You know, I've been with people, I can't cook. Why can't you cook? Well, I burn the food. You know, all you have to do is watch it. It's like when people describe that they can't cook, and I go, break it down. What can't you do? You know, it's like some days, this mystical thing, a good cook and a bad cook. I mean, there's better cooks and worse cooks, but I mean, you pay attention. You know, it isn't like this great art. You know, just like in my family, it was like there were these mystical people who were handy. And I thought, you know, it's like, you know, mainly because nobody would pay attention to what they're doing. So it was like an art when you fix something, like, oh. You mean this isn't working because it's not plugged in? Yes. You know. or and most knowledge is that way. But what I'm saying about paying attention is that, yes, a part of life is just to be paying attention to what we're doing. Because actually, for instance, I was mentioning the precepts before, not making karma. Unless you pay attention to what you're doing, how do you even know if you're making a mess of something? Have you ever been with somebody where there's such a fog that they're driving you crazy and they don't even know it? Somebody who's talking and they're not even paying attention to you? If you don't know what you're doing, just like, you know, hell, my car accidents have usually, not always, but most of them have come up with me just being in a fog. You know, I just suddenly backed up without looking fully and I back into something. There's no great teaching except, you know, you could also be lucky. There could have been a child there. You know, sometimes when I look at my accident, you know, and I haven't had that many, but when I look at them, I'll think, you know, I'm lucky that it was only, you know, it was only a parked car and not somebody that I backed into. Because, you know, there's no, if you're not looking, you're not looking. And you can't really tell what, you know, what impact you're having on others unless you pay attention, what you're doing, unless you're being mindful of it. Now getting back